Blog Talk Radio.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearnings.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Well, today I have a wonderful author on. She was born in Nigeria. She is now in Canada. She's a social worker in children's mental health, and she wrote a wonderful book called Daughters Who Walk This Path. This is her first novel. Let me just read a little bit. This is a small section of the book here. The evil is the no-good stranger lurking at the marketplace, waiting patiently for a chance to steal little children from right under the noses of distracted caregivers. Run away the instant a stranger offers you a smile, Mommy would tell us. But no one told us that sometimes evil is found much closer to home, and that those who want to harm us can have the most soothing and familiar voices. So that's just a hint of her book, and I believe she's on the line right now. Baoni,
yes, I am. Yes, good morning.
Good morning. So how are you this morning?
Fine, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so give me the correct pronunciation of your name so I don't butcher it.
It's Yejide.
Yejide?
Yes, if you break it down into three, so Yejide, Yejide.
Okay, and how do you say your last name?
Kilanko.
Kilanko? And
yes.
Now, is that Yoruba?
Yes, it is Yoruba.
Oh, okay. So that's why I say to you, I say, Baoni, She Alafia
Ni. Dani, Dadani, Dadani.
So I just was telling her hello and how is she doing, you know, in Yoruba. Wow. Okay, why didn't you email me and tell me to get a box of tissue? I needed a box of tissues. Like, okay, it would be a good chapter of the tapping in the zip and the happy. Oh my God. And some crying, happy crying, happy tears too, not all
yeah.
Bad tears, you know.
Yeah.
But wow. So let's talk about the name of the book, first of all, Daughters Who Walk This Path. I have an idea about it, but talk to me, why did you choose this title?
Okay. The title came from the part of the book where Morenike was in the village with her grandmother. And they had that basket weaving session where Morenike's mother told a young woman who was experiencing have some issues with having a child that others have walked this path before you and they now balance babies on their back and that, you know, that yours would not be different. And so it was drawing from that, it was talking about women, young girls who have walked the path of sexual abuse. And so that's what, you know, we followed Morayo and Aunt Moranike's life story. And so that was where that name, the title came from.
Yeah, that's what I remember reading that section with the grandmother. So many children are affected by child abuse. I just got off the line with the wonderful organization, Philadelphia Children's Alliance, who work with children, and also a child sexual abuse survivor, actually a male child sexual abuse survivor, which people usually don't talk about a lot. So it is happening all over the globe. Now, one of the you talk about so much in the book. You talk about albinism. You talk about political issues. You talk about family, ethnic, tribal issues. You talk about, you know, what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a good woman? What does it mean to be a good daughter? You know, what does it mean to be part of a family and your family name? And you talk about breast cancer. I mean, you have so much in this book that's what makes it wonderful, because you're able to weave all these different topics together. Let's talk about the albinism a little bit, because that is a really big issue. Actually, I was reading somewhere that Nigeria has one of the largest populations of albinos. Talk to me about why you thought it was important to bring that topic into the book.
It was because initially when I started, the first manuscript, NIA was not an albino. And I was reading, I love to read a lot of news articles. So I was online reading an article, and I came across an article about how albinos were being killed in, I believe it was Eastern Africa. I'm not sure of the particular country now. And so that, when I read it, I was like, wow, because I did grow up having, like you said, Nigeria has a high population of albinos, even though I didn't have any one in my family, and there was one particular person I was close to. And so it got me thinking about it. And then I did some, and I read some more. And I thought, you know what? And when we're talking about superstitions and differences, and I think for me, I looked at NIA had a physical, like we would say, a difference in terms of her skin color. And Muraya was dealing with something more hidden.
Nobody could see
what was going on. Exactly. Sorry, go ahead. And we would probably say that NIA would have a harder life because of a physical difference, quote unquote. Like, you know, if they were saying, okay, you know, who was going to, and but because we can't see the scars that things like these leave to people, so it was just something that I wanted to explore. And I think because when I started writing the book, I honestly didn't know I was going to get published. I didn't know how far it was going to go. And so I wrote it for me. I wrote it for me as I'm processing all those things in my head. And so that's why many things in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, you were able to weave it together, so that's what makes it a great book. I want to mention to people who are listening, I found a foundation, actually. It's called the Albino Foundation, and it's in Nigeria. And their website is albinofoundation.org. So if people wanted to learn more about that, and specifically what's going on in Nigeria and resources there, they can check out that website. And on their website, they talk about the prevalence rate of albinism in Nigeria is ranked amongst the highest in the world. Over 2 million albinos living in the country. And they have a lot of support resources on this website for people living with albinism. And that it's a genetic condition. But in your book, you do talk about how, you know, that she's ostracized, the child, the baby thing is an evil spirit, and it's going to bring bad luck, and all these, you know, folk tales that are surrounding it. The wife is bad, she stood out in the sun. So I think it's important that you brought it up in the book, because it can break, you know, miseducation. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So now let's talk about Mariah and her story. And as I, you mentioned that it's a secret, it's hidden, nobody can see what happened to her. And that's what my guest on the previous show this morning talked about, that, you know, physical abuse, there's scars, but, you know, nobody can see it, so nobody may be able to get the person help. Like, if they don't want to come out, you may not be able to recognize, because I asked the gentleman, I said, well, what could somebody have seen? Were there any changes in you? Somebody should notice something. How will we know that something happened to you? And he said, you know, we hide it. So did you talk to people, because you're a social worker, had you talked to children who had gone through sexual abuse, and you kind of wove the story there, or how did you come up with her path?
Because initially when I started my social work job, I was working in child protection. So I worked with children who had been either at risk of sexual or physical abuse or had experienced it. And so in talking, talking to their parents, to begin to have a sense of, you know, how they feel. And when I left that role, I moved on to counseling, which is what I do now. And so I do counseling with children from the ages of 6 to 18. And so as part of that role as well, I do talk to children who've experienced it. And sometimes there are signs that we miss. it's not as visible. There's one thing I would say is, like, you know, you have all those uncles who have this habit of pulling children to sit on their lap. And then all of a sudden you find out, you know, when this uncle comes to the house, your child is suddenly, you know, this uncle gets into the house, your child takes off.
Right.
And there are little things that, you know, that you, that are not as visible, but that you can still pick up if you're looking for stuff like that. But I guess as parents, that's not the first thing you want to look for. Okay.
Yeah, let me just read. Let me read a little again from this is from your book, and I'll talk about this. This is the main character talking about what kind of the first incident with the perpetrator. I stood for a moment dumbfounded. I was not exactly sure about what had happened. Had Brody meant to touch me? Was it an accident? My heart pounding. I touched the spot his finger had caressed. So this is the thoughts that run through children's mind. Like, you're like, did that really, I mean, did they really mean to? No, maybe I'm imagining. But I would say no, like that first incident is kind of a hint, you know, that people should listen to their instincts. But see, when you're a kid, you're just learning what your instincts are.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't, when we sometimes talk about, say, you know, like safety proven when it comes to sexual abuse in terms of good touch, bad touch. But for a child who is still trying to figure it out, that means they have a context to go from. Like if you've had a conversation with your child about, oh, you know, this is a good touch, this is a bad touch. So when that touch happens and, they, you know, they have some self, maybe this is, you know, they can come to you and say, oh, you know, this happened. But for a child who's never, a parent or their parents have never had any discussion with them about stuff like that. So they're thinking, well, it's uncle, and uncle is nice, and uncle likes me. So I guess he wasn't really bad. Maybe he didn't mean it, right? So then you can easily rationalize things away when it, that's not what you want. You know, it's not something that you're, and she had no context to go, you know, to go from. Like, oh, okay, maybe this was what mom was talking about good or bad touch.
Yeah. That's what I was telling earlier, that I did talk to my daughter about good and bad touch and, you know, also people making you look at different images in magazines or on the TV and things of that nature. So important. But as you talk in your book, it's very shameful, and in different cultures, it's even like more like on lockdown, meaning like no mention of sexuality at all is discussed, you know, even how like maybe your menstrual cycle until it actually happens, or, you know, having a baby, what you're going to experience. I mean, none of these things are at all talked about. So it's very difficult, even more so with that cultural aspect. Let's talk about culture a little, because that's brought up in the book a lot, and what it means to be a good daughter, a good woman, you know, to wait and hold yourself for marriage. But then, you know, as people are growing, become adolescents, they have their freedom and they want to experience things. But when what happens with the main character, though, when she gets that freedom, it kind of goes awry. And that's a form of coping. Can you talk to us about the issue of coping when someone has been abused, sexually abused?
I think it could go either way when you really become, like, you're really frigid in a sense. Like, everything's on lockdown. Your emotions, everything, your everything's on lockdown. Or it could go the other way where you think, okay, this is my way of getting control. Like, it's, I give myself to whom I want when I want. It's me. I'm controlling this. And versus, like, is someone taken from me. There's some instances where for a child whose first sexual experience or who is an individual whose first sexual experiences happened within the context of abuse, they don't know what the norm is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tend to base all the, you know, they tend to, based how they react to stuff like that, based on what has happened to them. And so within, so it could either go different ways because they're trying to cope and thinking, well, if I get to control what I do with my body, and then nobody else gets to decide that for me.
Yeah, that's what the character's doing. We don't want to give too much away, but let's talk about the politics. You'd have one of the characters who's trying to run for office, and that's a serious corruption in politics in Nigeria is the ongoing issue. I mean, I read about it in news all the time. I mean, and you bring up the issue of, you know, even life-threatening that the guy would even try to run, you know, that he could get killed, you know. So do you feel that this day in Nigeria that that's still going on to that extent, that people will be killed?
Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I've been away from Nigeria. I moved about 15 years ago. So what I know is limited to what I hear from people, what I read in the news. But I would say
mm-hmm.
that it's still very much the same. And I think for that thing, what I really wanted to point out is sometimes we look at short-term gain versus long-term gain. And then that's like, okay, you know what, this is what I'm getting now, let me just be content with it. And of that scene of the culture where you don't question adults, you don't question people in authority, you don't question anyone, you know, if they say this is what it is, then that's what it is. And even if you have, you know, you just because you don't rock the boat, the people around you don't encourage you to do that. I think it's changing. I personally think it's changing. That we're having more and more young people saying, you know what, we've been doing this for a very long time now, and it's not working for us. So
mm-hmm,
it's time
mm-hmm.
we look at other options. So I have hope. I have hope that things will begin to turn around for us. As long as the old God, who've been in power for years and years, still stay there, I don't see things changing. But I have hope
well, they're
that,
benefiting.
Yeah. So I hope that things will begin to change in the future.
Well, we talk about a lot of serious things, but you have some comedy in here, too. I want to read just one little section here. This is actually they're making fun of this young politician. It says, the man chuckled to himself. His date of birth was tattooed on his stomach, right above his extra-large belly button. The other man burst into laughter, exposing uneven teeth stained red by cola nuts. Atanda, you have come again with this, your elephant memory. I wonder if Mufu shows his stomach to prove his date of birth. The woman laughed, wiping the sweat on her brow with a stained white handkerchief. The flyer that I had just handed her floated to the ground. She didn't seem to notice. So you have a little comedy here. They're making fun of the guy. And then there's another little spat scene earlier in the book between kids at a soccer field. But then it goes into one of the kids talks about the mom. Nobody talks about mom. That's like off limits, you know. Nobody talks about, you know, the mom. And also there's some scenes with the girls when the main character goes to college. There's some back and forth language between them, just, you know, kind of banter. So it's not all sad. And there's also romance in your book. I don't want people to think, again, that it's all serious. You have some wonderful, wonderful love stories, plural. And not just romantic love stories, but familial love stories, if I will say, of family members reconnecting, you know, and realizing that they were truly loved, I think, which is also so important, especially for, well, I don't want to give anything away. I'll just say family reconnection. How about that? How long did it take you to write the book?
The first draft took me 8 months to write. And so after I finished that, I gave it to a couple of friends to read for me, and then I went back and I did it. So the draft that I sent out and I got an agent with took me a year to write, and then we worked on the book some more. So all that took from 2009 to 2010, and then the book was sold to Penguin Canada in 2012.
Wow!
And it got
published. I mean, that's pretty fast.
Oh, 2011. Sorry. 2011, I mean, and then it got published 2012. So everything happened within the space of 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, some people talk about, I was writing a book for 5 years or 10 years, you know, or, you know, 2 years. So, I mean, that's pretty a quick turnaround. Congratulations to you. But I think, again, that's back to you were able to weave so many stories that are very important for today to talk about. And let's talk about this ethnic tribal stuff. Igbos versus Yoruba versus Hausa, all this stuff, you know, because as an American, as an African-American, when we look back at Africa and we look at the different tribes across the continent, you know, for us, they're like, well, they're African. What are they fighting about? You know, why are you guys fighting? What's the history about this? You know, because there's a scene where the dad is like, you know, telling the daughters, you can only go out. He got a map. You know, this is, I love that scene. Okay, you see these states here? This is where you can pick a husband. Every place else, no, is off limits. You know, that was a great scene, you know? And then he was like, when you're finished with the map, you give it to your sister. Talk to us about this fight here.
I think, you know, because it's going to be, I think this next year is going to be 100 years, the amalgamation of Nigeria. by Lord Lugard, British Lord. And I think because most we don't realize that in Nigeria we have over 200 ethnic languages. So we have different foods, different cultures. We have, so you can travel within 4 hours and you wouldn't be able to understand what the next person is speaking. And that's why we all speak English. So we're very different. And I think in a sense that because I believe that because we didn't agree to come together to form a union, it was something, you know, like when they were carving up the different colonial masters were carving up Africa into countries, they decided what the boundaries were going to look like.
Right,
the people
right.
who live in those places weren't given the choice, okay, which tribe do you want to go with and what country do you want to be a part of? So I think that's a big part of it. And then adding in the religion piece, where we have a predominantly Muslim population in the country versus down south where it's predominantly Christian. So I think all those historical stuff, booze, and when things happen and we're not happy about stuff, then everybody goes back to their tents and remembers all the grievances somebody from this tribe did to them. And so I'm hoping that, as you know, like we younger Nigerians begin to see ourselves as Nigerians, not as a Yoruba person first. Because I think when we begin to see ourselves only within the context of our tribe, it's going to be hard for us to be a part of a nation. And so there are no easy answers because we keep still having people who say, well, maybe we need to all, you know, go to, like, divide the country up and each person should have a country or, you know, like, form a country, like a Yoruba nation, I guess, or an Igbo nation. I don't think there are any easy answers to that. And I truly believe we have, we're stronger because of our differences. And I'm hoping
if you take the analogy, that's okay. If you take the analogy of, you know, your hand, you know, one finger doesn't have the power of five fingers and your fist. You know what I mean? So you need all five fingers to have the power. And if you separate the fingers, you know, if you lose a couple fingers, then you're not as powerful. So working together really is the power, and that all people are suffering these variety of issues, you know, issues of albinism or breast cancer or child abuse or hunger or, you know, no work or electricity. You know, you bring the issue of, you know, the utility issues, handling natural disasters. These are things that doesn't matter who you are, because the nature doesn't care, you know, about you. If there's a flood, what ethnic tribe you come from. Politicians aren't really going to care. They're just there for the money, you know, power.
That's right.
And so, you know, it doesn't make sense that they're riding around, you know, in bulletproof cars, and people are begging on the streets in their countries, you know. One of the things that Fela used to say was that, you know, they like struggle. Politicians want struggle, because struggle means they're going to continue to be in office basically bamboozling, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
So when there's no struggle, then the politicians have no work, you know, maybe.
Yeah, it's that same divide and conquer thing. You know, so they use all those differences, you know, to keep you. You guys are, the people are the masses are fighting each other where they are all at the top, you know, cleaning out the treasury. So it works for them.
Now, you're coming out with another book already, or you're working on another book. Can you talk about that a little bit? Or
yes. So my second novel is called When Land Spirits Cross Big Waters. And it's going to be out next spring. I don't have a date yet, by Penguin Canada as well. And it's set in Nigeria and the U.S. And the main topic of this novel is domestic violence. And as you know, I lived in the U.S. for a while. I lived in Maryland and Pennsylvania before we moved to Canada. And so I've always, like, you know, kept in touch with things happening in the U.S. And about 5 years, we've had a quite number of Nigerian women killed by their husbands in the U.S., and all of them have been nurses, and in most cases, the men went back to Nigeria and married them and brought them to the U.S., and so that was what informed my writing the book. And so it follows two women who met each other in Amsterdam at the airport when they had a layover, and they were coming to the U.S. to join their husbands. So it follows their lives and, you know, what they experience as as you know, immigrants to a new place or a new country, living with men they barely don't know. You know, they didn't really know them and what it means to finding their own voice. And so I'm editing right now, and so it's been a very, it's different from Daughters in some ways, and so I've enjoyed writing it as well.
Well, that's great. Well, I want to mention to people that you do have a website, and it's your name, YajideKilanko.com, and you can learn more about her there and news about her and book reviews and contact her if you want right there. Also, she's on Twitter, YajideKilanko on Twitter, so you can follow her on Twitter. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys, and become a fan on Facebook, especially because this weekend I'm giving away some copies. She's been so gracious to offer some copies of her books to give away to listeners. So follow me at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and send me an email. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Thank you so much, or I should say O'Shea, right, for coming on the show today.
Yes. Thank you, Eshi. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It was really a lovely time. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day. Odabo.
Okay, Odabo.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with Yajide Kilanko, author of Daughters Who Walk the Path. And you should follow me because I'm going to give away some of her books at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook. And you can win a copy of Daughters Who Walk This Path, but you got to follow or become a fan. Next week I'll be talking about what happens when somebody dies. You don't want to think about that, but there are a lot of legal things that need to be done to try to make the transition smooth, so tune in next Saturday for that. On the 20th, I'll be talking with Augusta Hopkins about mindfulness for stress reduction. And then later in the month, African-American oceanographer will be coming on the 27th to talk about her career. And how maybe if you want to become an oceanographer, how you can do that. So please tune in, and thank you so much for supporting the show. You guys have a wonderful Saturday.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food, it's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at foreignlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.